Rahman Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Merciful, the Compassionate. All praises to Allah, the Creator of the universes and their Sustainer, the Provider of believers and unbelievers. And may His choicest blessings be on the seal of His prophets, the last of His messengers and His holy progeny. And in particular, may His special blessings continue ever to flow on that fifth member of the household of the Holy Prophet, on Sayyid al-Shuhada, Aba Abdullah al-Husayn, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi. Last night we posed at the situation where the Imam alayhi salam had bade farewell to Ibn Abbas, to Abdullah bin Zubair, Abdullah bin Umar, and his brother Muhammad al-Hanafiya. In his last speech that he delivered in Mecca, the night before his departure, which we touched on last night and I will not take you back on it, he said very clearly that he was moving to his destination, death was inevitable, and that he too was eager to meet his predecessors, just as Yaqub was eager to meet his son Yusuf. So you can imagine the eagerness, the keenness with which Imam Hussein alayhi salam was leaving Mecca. And he said anybody who wanted to join him should join him next morning. At dawn he would leave on the trip. And as he left, before or just as he reached his first station, Tan'im, there followed a garrison behind him. The garrison sent by the same person that we mentioned yesterday, Umru bin Sa'id bin Al-As. It was sent by him to stop Imam Hussein alayhi salam from leaving Makkah. Now that gesture by itself establishes beyond question that they did not want Imam Hussein alayhi salam to leave Makkah, that the plan to murder him in Makkah had been accomplished, that the intelligence of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that people in the garb of pilgrims had come into Mecca, was so accurate. Why else send the garrison to stop him from leaving? But it is fantastic to note that when Imam Hussein alayhi salam left Medina for Mecca on the main highway, he was not followed at all, despite the demand for allegiance by Walid. Walid made no effort to follow him. This time he was followed, and when he was followed, he was overtaken and he was asked to stop and go back to Mecca. Instantly he refused to do so. He said, no, I'm not coming back to Mecca, I am proceeding on towards Kufa. And hence there was a scuffle. They went to blows against each other. The entourage of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, of course, under the command of Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam, immediately came forth. And each side, it is reported, used whips used for their horses to hit each other. Ultimately, they were overpowered, and Imam Hussein alayhi salam ordered the caravan to proceed. Ultimately, they halted at Tan'im. Tan'im is an easy name for me to mention, because those, alhamdulillah, who have just come back from pilgrimage, and those who have been to pilgrimage, all of you know Tan'im because it is a known miqat. After performance of Hajj, when we want to perform another Umrah, we go in, wear our ihram at Tan'im, Masjid al-Tan'im, close to the city of Mecca. That is where the Imam alayhi salam stopped at that point in time to make his first manzil, his first station. But he used that opportunity well, because just as he reached there, he saw a huge caravan of camels moving, this time from Yemen. They were taking gifts from Yemen for the Caliph in Damascus. A new Caliph in Damascus appointed, Yemen was already sending gifts. And this is how, unfortunately, the Caliphs of the time behaved in the name of Islam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam stopped the caravan, and indeed he could even have confiscated the gifts as the Imam of the time. On the contrary, He behaved in the most humane way and turned around to the camel drivers, saying he wanted to hire their camels because he thought a few more people had joined him from Makkah than he had anticipated. Of course, a good number of them left him in very good time, as I hope we will discuss this evening. Or if not this evening, at least first thing tomorrow evening. He hired more camels. And then he asked the camel drivers if they want to join him, offering them to pay them the full hire if they join him all the way to Kufa, because that is the destination he then mentioned. Or if they want to go only halfway, they could leave him as and when they chose, and he would pay them pro rata the proportionate hire charges that would be due to them. And having reached this agreement and hired more camels, the Imam alayhi salam moved on. The second station where he stopped was Safar. And the historical event that happened at Safar was that he met a poet called Farazdak. Farazdak says that he was moving in to perform a pilgrimage, and he sees this huge caravan moving out of Makkah. He was, of course, astonished that this is not the time to meet traffic from ahead of me. There would be traffic from behind me. What was wrong? He made inquiries, and he was told, this is the grandson of the Prophet, having converted his Hajj into Umrah. And he thought that was startling. He decided he would meet Imam Hussein alayhi salam himself to find out what were the circumstances in which a mu'min could do that, and how was that going to be possible in those circumstances to learn the new thread, as it were. And when he meets Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he introduces himself. The Imam asks him, who are you? He says, I'm an Arab, and no more. Next year, if inshallah we have a sitting on the fourth Imam alayhi salam, Farazdak will come into picture even more prominently. For the time being, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is told that he is an Arab. So the Imam says, where are you coming from? He says, well, I'm coming from Iraq. Imam Hussein alayhi salam asks him, what is the condition, what is the situation of the people in Iraq vis-a-vis me, relating to me? How are they placed? You can see the Imam alayhi salam taking a strategic decision at this point in time on his journey. And the poet tells him in a poetic fashion, he says that قُلُوبُهُمْ مَعَقْ وَسُيُوفُهُمْ مَعَ بَنِي أُمَيَّةِ, their hearts are with you, but their swords are also pointed to you. Their swords are with the Umayyads. What a beautiful description. I've been at pains for 2 nights to show the condition of the people at that time, the political setup, and how the authority of the people was totally, totally annihilated. The psychological structure that was built by Muawiyah was such that the mind of the man, the mind of the Ummah, should be totally paralyzed, and he should be made completely subservient to the orders of the Khalif, however irreligious they may be, however immoral they may be, and however injurious to the cause of Islam they may be. Easy for us today, 14 centuries later, to understand that when we just look at the way Hitler behaved. Because Hitler behaved in precisely that way. Take charge of the mind of the nation and then dictate to the nation. A very, very ordinary principle, very well-known principle on which dictators act. That if you allow the public to think, then the moment they have the freedom to think, they will oppose you. They will tell you what they think is right, and they will build courage. And this is what Imam Hussein alayhi salam was asking them to do, to build courage that as Muslims, they should be able to stand up to ensure that the religion of Allah is protected and preserved, that being the motto of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. The Faraz that put it so well to him, that their hearts are with you. In other words, they accept you are right, They know you are the most pious person. They know you are the person most entitled and most legitimate to help to hold the office of the Caliph. Despite that, they are prepared to be coerced. They are prepared to be driven as slaves by the Caliph, and so that the slave age returns to the Arab world. And this is what the Umayyad regime sought to establish. Alas, that the Abbasids did the same. But inshallah, we shall see that hopefully in the years to come. For the moment, this was the trick the Umayyads were playing. Farazdak, in his assessment, was able to say that they do consider you the most prominent. The hearts are with you. They come out for you. And this is what happened when the Kufans wrote their letters. They were expressing their true sentiments. The moment Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad says, if anybody supports Muslims, I will lock him up. The moment he says, anybody who does not support Muslim will be given so many thousand dinars. The Muslims of the time change. Now, this is a very important part of that episode for us today. Because that wrong which the Kufians did is a wrong we can perpetuate. The caution we have to take from it is to ask ourselves, if we had been in Kufa on that occasion, how would we have reacted? Would we have remained with Hazrat Muslim alayhi salam? I said last night, 18,000 people had made allegiance to Hazrat Muslim. When he besieged the government house in Kufa, and Hazrat Muslim alayhi salam, bold as he was and spiritual minded as he was, the moment he learned that Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad has issued an order that nobody should support him and that he would kill anybody who supports him, he marched to the government house. And it is said that at that time, when he asked the Muslims to come with him, the total number of Muslims in that cavalry that besieged the government house was 4,000 only. When asked where did the 14,000 go, even before the game started, they had already deserted Hazrat Muslim alayhi salam, 14,000 of them. But Hazrat Muslim alayhi salam besieged the government house and said to Ubaydullah, I have heard you have issued these orders against me. I want you first to tell me, what wrong have I done? You can see exactly the speech of Imam Hussein alayhi salam that was to be delivered in Karbala on the 10th of Muharram, rehearsed by Hazrat Muslim to the people of Kufa. He says, is there one point in Sharia that I have disobeyed personally? Look at the level of the confidence of the man. Who amongst us here can ever claim to be able to say, is there any one point in Sharia that I have disobeyed? He did in public, and did so in confronting a die-hard enemy, and then turns around to say, have I, in replying questions on fiqh, have I, in leading my people on the questions of religion, have I given one wrong fatwa? Have I given one wrong answer to one question? أَحَلَّلُوا حَرَامُ اللَّهِ أَوْ أَحَرَّمُوا حَلَالُ اللَّهِ Have I made one question which is haram, halal, or one halal matter? Have I called it haram? And then says, O Ubaydullah, don't be a coward. If you are serious, if you mean to say that you will execute anybody who supports me, come out now. I will not enter the palace wrongfully. It is not given to me to trespass into the government house. But it is given to you to come out and ask me, why am I besieging your palace? But you can see the command that Hazrat Muslim alayhi salam exercised. It is said that when, by the time it became Maghrib, because he besieged it after Dhuhr prayers, by the time it became Maghrib and he recited Salah first, because that is the teaching of Islam. That is the teaching of Islam. And by the time he then decided that he will move from the government house to the mosque, and then return to carry on with the siege of the government house, he found that his horsemen there numbered 300. I will say no more, because the rest is a very well known part of our history, that you know that after prayers, when he turns back, there were 10 people at the door of the mosque. He was alone, solitary soul, to stand before himself. But in this process, catching back on the point I made on the fifth night of the consistency of behavior by the members of this household, and this is how Imam Hussain alayhi salam described Hazrat Muslim, as we saw last night, Siqati min Ahli Bayti. One sees that parallel between the way Imam Ali alayhi salam behaved in Siffin and Hazrat Muslim behaved in Kufa. For indeed, Hazrat Muslim was in Siffin too. One finds that Imam Ali alayhi salam at one stage in Siffin, frustrated by the killings of Muslims, marches on to the tent of Muawiyah, and Muawiyah gets scared to see that Imam Ali alayhi salam is charging to his camp, calls Amr bin As, and Muawiyah gets ready immediately to flee from Siffin, saying, now Ali is attacking me personally. And that was the cowardice of Muawiyah and of all his cronies anyway. Imam Ali alayhi salam stopping at the entrance says, Muawiyah, the battle at the end of the day is between you and me. I claim I am the legitimate Khalif of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, appointed by the Holy Prophet, may peace be upon him and his progeny. How does the Muslim of today dare ask our youths and tell our youths that you people are talking of Ali? Ali himself never claimed the Khilafah. How dare they ask that question? In Siffin, Imam Ali alayhi salam not only asked that question, he raised that question immediately after marrying the Holy Prophet in the court of Abu Bakr. He raised this question when Umar was appointed. He raised this question when the council to nominate the successor of Umar, that is when Uthman was appointed. All along he raised this question. And he said in Shakshakiya, which he delivered in the open court in Kufa, that he had always maintained his rights to the Khilafah, always asked for it. And his living for those 25 years, he describes that situation in most poetic but most practical terms. He turns around and says that those 25 years I passed with a bone picking in my neck every day and every night. This is how he describes that situation. And he put that question boldly and squarely to Muawiyah, that, oh Muawiyah, come out and let us battle it out. If you are the true successor of Allah, true successor of the Holy Prophet appointed by Allah to be his Khalif, may we seek to Allah that you should succeed in that battle. And if I am, that I should succeed. Muawiyah did not agree to come out. But what Hazrat Muslim also saw, that when it became time for Salah, Imam Ali alayhi salam would tell his people, stop the war and let us pray. Ibn Abbas was in Siffin, the Ibn Abbas that we are talking about, who followed Imam Hussain alayhi salam to Makkah. And he turns around to Imam Ali and says, Ya Ali, the battle is now in full fury and full ferocity. Do you want to interrupt it for the sake of Salah? And as you know it all yourselves, Imam Ali's answer was, Ya Ibn Abbas, it is for this Salah that the fury of the battle is taking place at all. And we see that behavior continued in Karbala. But even when a lesser person than an imam, a lesser person than a masoom was in charge, you saw exactly that scene. But as Muslim was leading his people in prayers, what was Muawiyah doing? He gathered the tribal chiefs. He took the time. He had no time for prayers. He gathered the tribal chiefs, gave them money and said, go and bribe the people of your tribes that they should not go back to Muslim and they should not support Muslim. Well, that is how that agenda proceeded with the Umayyads. And that is how the people were made to believe. Hence, Farazdak is able to say, their hearts are with you. They know where truth lies. If they did not know where truth lay, and there was a confusion in their minds, or they were not able to decide because of definite circumstances Allah might have forgiven them. But when they knew where truth lay, where Haqq was, and yet decided to side with an oppressor, then what hope was there for the Kufians to receive the mercy of Allah or his pardon or forgiveness? However, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, having heard that couplet from Farazdak, that قُلُوبُهُمْ مَعَكْ وَسُيُوفُهُمْ مَعَ بَنِي أُمَيَّةِ, smiles and says to Farazdak, how beautifully have you put it, and how truthfully is it? Farazdak says, but destiny will be decided by Allah, Ibn Rasulullah. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam immediately cites an ayah of Quran saying, كُلُّ يَوْمٍ هُوَ فِي شَانٍ, that famous ayah from Surah Rahman, that every day is under his command. Every day he operates and commands as he wills. And then Imam Hussein alayhi salam proceeds to utter memorable words for us. He says to Farazdak, and Farazdak reported it so beautifully, and it's been reported by all historians of all denominations. Ibn Asakir has reported, Ibn Afir has reported, of course, Sheikh Mufid has reported, Sheikh Tusi has reported, Khwarizmi has reported, all of them have reported this part. Imam Hussein alayhi salam then presented. Farazdak says, may Allah give you what you have set out for. Now that was a beautiful expression, saying as it were, that if you have set out to challenge the Umayyads regarding the Khilafah, because it is yours, and the hearts of the people are with you, may Allah give you success there. If you have set out for sacrifice, may Allah award you that. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's answer to that, he says, yes, we have set out with our aims. If destiny will be compatible with our aims, if destiny will provide fulfillment of our aims, we shall thank Allah, and indeed we shall seek his help in order to thank him. So in order even to thank Allah, he teaches that it is not possible for us just to say shukran lillah. It is not possible for us to express the real thanks to Allah without seeking help from him. And hence, even in one of the du'as of the fourth Imam alayhi salam, the teaching is, oh Allah, give me the tawfiq, and give me the ability that I should be able to thank you. Because thanking Allah is a level of piety, and hence the importance that we do so continuously. Indeed, the eighth Imam alayhi salam's teaching is, do not finish your salah without the sijda of shukr. That sijda of shukr that we do, of such great importance. And indeed, hadith is that sijda of shukr that we make after prayers can well be the cause for acceptance of the salah. And hence the great importance of that sijda. Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, and we shall pray to Allah that he should give us the strength and the tawfiq to thank him for having provided destiny which was compatible with our aims. And then he goes further to say, but if Allah's will is such that the destiny does not provide fulfillment of our aims, then he has not lost who has set out to fulfill his aims with truth as his motive and piety in his heart. Those then are the criteria. What is absolutely fantastic, and I beseech you to reflect on that aspect of the matter. And this is why I'm taking time to discuss this journey, because those stations provide beautiful lessons, particularly on piety. Imam Hussein alayhi salam was now already surrounded by enemies, and I say surrounded in a metaphorical way. He has had to leave Medina. Can you imagine? And he was complaining in one of the speeches, which I did not discuss lack of time. But in that second speech he says, what do I say about people who have caused me to leave my hometown, to leave the graveside of the Prophet, who have put me in fear and now make me leave the sanctuary of Allah? That is the position, the situation of the Imam alayhi salam. Changed so that he does not leave Makkah with a garrison of people moving on, knowing that he is going towards his sacrifice. And yet, in that frame of mind, when he is stopped by a poet and he's spoken to in this language, what beautiful words he uses to teach a philosophic principle of idealism, that if Allah will give us what we desire, because that must come from Allah, then we shall thank Him and seek help from Him to thank Him. And if He does not, we know that He has not lost who has set out in His aims with truth as his motive, seeking haqq and piety in his heart. So those are the criteria, as I said, which even in that situation he is able to spell out, which shows that he is truly the repository of the teachings of Allah. That even in such circumstances he does not have to reflect on what is the correct situation. He spells it out even in those circumstances immediately in the nick of time. And having that part of the conversation having been over, Farazbak says, Yabna Rasulullah, how fortunate that I have met you here. There are questions on nazar and manasik, on vows and procedure of Hajj. And Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, yes, Farazbak, ask me now, because you are already on the way to commencing your manasik. Farazbak says, I asked him all the questions that I was unsure about. And of course, he says, I obtained satisfactory answers to them all. And then, although a number of historians stopped there saying that they then saluted each other and departed, but Khwarizmi goes further and says, Khwarizmi says, he asked the Imam another question on tafsir. He says, Yabna Rasulullah, that ayah in Surah Bani Israel, Yawma Unasi Kulla Nasin Bi Imamihim, يَوْمَ نَدْعُوا كُلَّ أُنَاسٍ بِإِمَامِهِمْ, a day on which we will call upon, raise, that is the day of judgment, all people with their Imam. What is that? What does that ayah really mean? And Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, for us that we are both on a journey, but suffice it to tell you, even in the course of a journey, that it means there will be two types of Imams. How absolutely apt to the situation. There will be two types of Imams. There will be that Imam who will be rightly guided, the Mahdi, the rightly guided Imam, and he will guide towards, he will lead people towards true guidance, which will end in heaven. And there will be those Imams who will be wicked, and they will mislead people and lead them astray. The final destination of that group of people following such an Imam will be hell. What an important proposition that the Imam alayhi salam made. Quran mentions that proposition also. And when one understands that tafsir of that ayah of Surah Bani Israel, I think it is verse 71, when one understands that particular interpretation in the light of that other hadith of the Holy Prophet, that after me, my ummah will be divided into 73 sects, as we've already discussed, and only one of them will be on the right path. How important then that we determine for sure who is the true Imam. Because 72 of them will be Imams who will be false. And there can be no doubt about it, because the Prophet has said so. How important, therefore, for each Muslim, and particularly for us who are seeking the truth, and inshallah, grace of Allah, that we are on the path of truth, but the prayer to Allah that we should remain on that path. رَبَّنَا لَا تُزِغْ قُلُوبَنَا بَعْدَ إِذْ هَدَيْتَنَا. Do not allow our hearts to stray away. بَعْدَ إِذْ هَدَيْتَنَا, after you have put us on this guidance. وَهَبْ لَنَا مِنْ لَدُنْكَ رَحْمَةً, and favor us with your mercy. إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ الْوَهَّابُ, for surely you are the giver. You are the one who will give. Ayah of Quran and a dua, we constantly recite in Qunut. Well, Imam Hussein alayhi salam dogmatically says to Farazdak, make up your mind now, because that day will be a day on which يَوْمَ نَطْعُ كُلَّ أُنَاسٍ بِإِمَامِهِمْ. They will be called with their imams. If their imams can save them, they will go to heaven. If not, they will not. Hence the question I keep asking. Show me another fact in which the imams can turn around and say that when your soul will be taken from the body, I will be there. Who other than Imam Ridha alayhi salam has said that? He said that. And Imam Ali alayhi salam said that when the first night will come, you will see me in the grave. What other imam has said that? There were many companions, some of them claimed to be the successors to the Prophet. Who dared say that? But Imam Ali alayhi salam said that sitting on the minbar in Kufa, that you will find me there and you will see me a helper there. How many ahadith of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in that aspect? And then Imam Hussein alayhi salam promised that when you will be in the Qabr, Munkar and Nakir will not even question you. The Urdu Shair says of those people that they will be told, so Nego is a chain say, Wo Ali ka gunam hai. This is what will be said. And this is how beautifully the Urdu poet has put it. Who else has dared say that is my question. Imam Rida alayhi salam says, you come for my ziyarah in Mashhad, I will wait for you at the bridge of Sirat. Look at that promise. And he says, I will wait for you, because then your feet might be trembling. I will then hold your hand and see that you cross the bridge right into heaven. I say, has Harun al-Rashid said that? Or has Ma'mun al-Rashid, la'anatullahi alayhim ajma'in, had they dared say that? It is even their capacity to and what the Imma alayhim salam have said has followed consistently. So has the first sage, so has the second sage, so has the third sage. Next year inshallah we shall discuss what the fourth and fifth said. Each one of them said. And as for the 12th Imam, the Imam of our time, he says that when you die, I am there. When your Salatul Janazah is being recited, I am in those rows reciting Salatul Janazah for you. I follow your body as it is taken to the grave, and I help sending your body into the grave, and I pray for you before I leave you. That is what Imam Zamana Ajjalallahu Farajahu says. We gather in these nights, indeed. We gather in these nights to give condolences to him, for he and he alone is the true living heir of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And to him are all the condolences due. Because as you know, when there is a bereavement in the family, we go to the heir and offer condolences to him. So are these sittings in the name of the 12th Imam alayhi salam to offer condolences to him. And such are his promises. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam lays it out so beautifully to Farazdak on his way to his martyrdom. If it was on his way to a university to make a lecture or at a podium, one can understand, because his frame of mind is based on that intellectual approach. But he's on his way to his death and he utters those beautiful words. And from there, he moves to Dhat-e Irq. At Dhat-e Irq, that is the station at which, by then, he had already received a letter from his cousin, Abdullah bin Ja'far. And Abdullah bin Ja'far, an eminent personality of extensively high and excellent standing in Medina at the time, had written a letter to Imam Hussein alayhi salam from Medina to Makkah, which the Imam alayhi salam received just before he was leaving Makkah. In that letter he says, oh my brother, there was no time to mention this last night. Oh my brother, I have heard you are leaving Makkah for Kufa. Please do not rush for Kufa. We know what the Kufians have done with our family before. You, and this is a beautiful expression of Hazrat Abdullah in that letter, he says, you are the shining light of this land. Extinguishing that light will mean extinguishing Islam. You are the standard which the guided people look to for their behavior. And you are the hope of the mu'mineen, of the faithful. You can see all three aspects so beautifully covered. So beautifully covered. That is Hazrat Abdullah. Not only philosophy included in those words, theology included in those words, couplets included in those words, all in one rushed letter. Rushed because he got the news that the Imam alayhi salam was leaving Kufa. Now it is at Zat Irq that he meets the Imam alayhi salam in person and produces to him a letter from the governor of Makkah with the brother of the governor present, because Hazrat Abdullah says to the governor of Makkah, I will not take your letter and give it to Hussein alayhi salam. He may not trust at your letter. So the governor says, I'll give you my brother Yahya. Take my brother Yahya with you, and Yahya will hand over the letter to the Imam. And so Hazrat Abdullah and Hazrat Yahya are both together when Hazrat Abdullah meets the Imam alayhi salam at Zat Irq and tells him again, don't leave. You have this fear that people have come in the garb of pilgrims, in ihram. But here is the brother of the governor, and here is the letter of the governor providing you security. Of course, in the presence of this outsider, the governor's brother, the Imam alayhi salam did not wish to say more. And saying to Abdullah bin Ja'far what he said to his brother, Muhammad Hanafiya, that last night I saw my grandfather in my dream, and he has ordered me to proceed towards Kufa. You remember, he had already written a letter to Basra, and yet he did not go to Basra. He turned to Kufa. Well, Hazrat Abdullah becomes totally helpless and says, may Allah protect you. Let me then come with you. But the whole idea, as we have discussed before, was not to take a strong army with him. That group that was moving was hardly armed. There was hardly a camel carrying armaments. Each was carrying the minimum armament that an Arab of that time would normally carry. A sword or a spear would be something that an Arab would anyway carry in his journey through the desert. And this is all how Imam Hussein alayhi salam was armed. And he left behind important warriors. He sent away Muslims. He kept behind Muhammad al-Hanafiya, saying, you will be my eye and ear when I will not be in Medina, and send me the intelligence reports. I must keep somebody behind to send me intelligence reports. A suggestion that persuaded Muhammad al-Hanafiya to leave behind, because it was not easy for them to leave Imam to go and stay behind in Medina or Makkah. Likewise, Hazrat Abdullah was told, you are so sick, you will not be able to bear this journey. It is going to be a journey of hardships and trials. But as they were ready to depart, and you can see the excellence of the character of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he says, oh my cousin, all the while this governor has sent me this letter out of consideration and courtesy to me. Courtesy demands that I should thank him for this letter. And he has given me the security in writing. I shall thank him in writing. He immediately writes a letter to the governor of Makkah, thanking him for the sila that he showed, the relationship that he expressed, the keenness of friendship that he expressed, and the security he gave. And then says, but the best security that I can have, khairul aman, amanullah, he says, the best security I can have is the security from Allah. And it is with that security from Allah that I'm marching on, because no other security can save me from the hands of Yazid. And then again, puts in memorable words of piety and teachings. He says, and he he only can expect the aman of Allah, the security of Allah on the day of judgment, who has fear of Allah in his on this earth. He will not receive the security of Allah on the day of judgment who has not feared Allah on earth, who has not been God-fearing here. Hence the teaching that we have to be God-fearing here to receive the aman of Allah there. Who more God-fearing than him? What fear does he have of Allah? How he saw that, we discussed on the first night in his couplet. Taraktu khalqa turran fi hawak. Beautiful couplet that he then expressed. These are the words with which he thanked the governor and taking the letter, they left. And they moved on. They moved on to Hajir. At Hajir, he makes a pause. And having made a pause, he decided that he must inform the Kufians that he is getting there. He had already written a letter, do you remember, saying that he would soon come without giving the date. The guest must inform the host his exact date of arrival and the flight number these days. The Imam alayhi salam at least had to express the exact situation. 27 days had passed since Hazrat Muslim alayhi salam had written to him a letter saying, I have 18,000 people giving allegiance, all sound people here are prepared to support you, and now is the correct time to come over. And the Imam alayhi salam responded to the Kufans. Now he writes the letter saying, I refer to your letters and to your recent letter which says that you are now 100,000 in number. Now that number cannot be questioned because the letter of the Imam is extant, in which he says, you have recently told me that is the figure of 18,000 had now risen to 100,000. So you are 100,000. So be it known to you that I have already left Makkah on the day of Tarwiyah, that is the 8th of Dhul Hijjah. On the day of Tarwiyah, I've already left Makkah and I'm proceeding towards you to meet you there on your promise that you will support me in my mission and you will support me in securing my rights. And then prays for them in that letter and sends the letter out. And that letter is given to Qais bin Mashhar Saydawi to send to the Kufians. By this time, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad had already learned that the Imam alayhi salam has left Makkah. He had learned, I'm sure, that he has left with a small garrison. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad had a huge army. Huge army. Yet you can see, he is so scared of those handful of people who are now traveling towards Kufa. He sends a complete garrison, indeed a complete barrack, to Qadisiyah to make a blockade so that the Imam alayhi salam should not be able to enter Kufa. Between Qadisiyah and Shah Khan, there is a complete blockade of armament of the cavalry, actually horsemen, guarding that border so that nobody can enter Kufa and nobody can come out of Kufa. One asks, why so many to defend against so few? But this is the question that determines who is on the right and who is on the wrong. However, the Imam alayhi salam moves on, sends this messenger. The messenger goes to Kufa and at Qadisiyah suddenly sees that there is this barricade of armament. And indeed, the commander of the army himself, the name given is Hussein bin Numair. Hussein bin Numair immediately stops this person and seeks to arrest him. The first thing that Qais does is he produces the letter and in the very at the very nose of Hussein bin Numair tears it into such pieces that nobody can even read what that letter is. You can see the importance to this man of guarding the word of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And that makes a Shia. That makes a Shia not one only following rituals of a religion. That courage and that conviction to notice immediately that I am the Qasid, I am the messenger of the Imam, I have got to uphold and protect his message. The first thing he does is he tears it into pieces. Immediately Hussein bin Numair says, whose letter is this? And he says, I'm not obliged to tell you. I will not answer that question. Hussein ibn Umair immediately stops Qais and sends him to Umaydullah ibn Ziyad, saying, I do not know what to do with him. Deal with him as you think fit. But here is the person who, in my view, is suspect and is liable to immediate apprehension. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad says, what is that letter? And he said, it's torn. It's already written. Even if I tell you, what good will that be? You will say what I'm telling you is not the truth. So he says, who are you? Gives him his true name. He says, who sent you? He says, Hussein sent me. He says, where did he see you? And he says, yes, it is at Hajar. At his station in Hajar, he has given me this letter, and he has sent me to bring this letter to certain people in Kufa. So Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad says, name the people. And you can imagine, immediately those people would be arrested and executed only because they were named for being recipients of the letter from Imam Hussein alayhi salam, as dictators behave even today. And Qais, immediately realizing the importance to protect the Shias of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, says, no, Ubaydullah, I will not name them. So Ubaydullah said, he couldn't say he didn't know them, because he was taking the letters to them. He says boldly, I will not name them. So Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad says, then Qais, I give you a choice. Either give me the names of these people, or climb on this minbar and curse Ali and curse Hussein. And Qais gives a beautiful answer. It is amazing to see how these Shias of the time are able to deal with these precarious propositions with such ease and with such fortitude and with such foresight. He immediately turns around to him and says, names, Ubaydullah, I have told you I will not give you. So that is out of the question. As for your second proposition, I am prepared to climb the minbar. What a beautiful answer. He did not say, I will curse Ali. He did not say he'll curse anybody. He said, I am prepared to climb the minbar. The meaning, Ubaydullah took was that he was prepared to curse. He climbs the minbar, adores Allah, recites the hand of Allah as we always do, proceeds to send blessings on the Holy Prophet, then sends blessings and salawat on Imam Ali alayhi salam, and then sends salawat on Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And having done that, says, oh Allah, curse Muawiyah, curse Yazid, and curse this Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, who is out to kill Imam Hussein alayhi salam. You can imagine what happened to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad then. So it actually backfired. His threat so majestically backfired. Instead of the curse going on people he wanted cursed, the curse came rightly on him and those whom he was protecting. And when he heard, he immediately ordered, arrest him, and tells him, I will kill you so that your each bone is broken. He gives the answer Hazrat Muslim gives, says, oh Ubaydullah, what else could I have expected from you? What else could I have expected from you? And he is taken to the top of the palace and thrown down from there so that each of his bones break. And is then taken round the town so that everybody becomes scared of what Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad can do. But this was the bravery. This was the preparedness and the eagerness of the true Shias of Imam Hussein alayhi salam to give their lives in the path of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, in the path of Allah. Indeed, this is what he said. What could I have expected from you? And I am now not upset. Indeed, this is what I look to. But it is amazing, it is astonishing when one looks at the reports of Karbala written by our enemies. In those reports one finds that eagerness to die not only comes from mature people like Muslim ibn Awsaja, who knew who Imam Hussein alayhi salam was, not only comes from Habib ibn Mawahir, not only comes from Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam, who truly knew, if there was anybody in Karbala who truly knew who Imam Hussein alayhi salam was, that was Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam. What we hear although we shall discuss more of him tomorrow night inshallah, but what we discuss what we know of Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam, that he never called Imam Hussein alayhi salam by his name. He always called him as Mawla, was not only out of love of a brother for a brother. It was not purely out of love. It was the recognition of the status, the true status of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Mawla, in the true spirit of that appointment Allah made, Man kuntu Mawlahu fahada Mawla. Because Hada Aliyun then became Hada Hassan and then became Hada Hussein, and that is the spirit on which Imam Hussein alayhi salam was a Mawla. When Hazrat Abbas uttered those words, dual intention, brother, true, but brother who is an elder brother to be respected and revered, and hence the Mawla, and truly the Mawla appointed by Allah. And one can see how each utterance, apparently ostensibly an utterance of the worldly fashion, taking piety with it, with so much sawab. But it was not only people of this eminence and this level who knew Imam Hussein alayhi salam and who were so eager to die. One finds a child like Hazrat Qasim alayhi salam, 13 years old boy, 13 years old only. He so eager to die. It was on the eve of Ashura, as you know, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam had gathered his people. And having gathered his people, he did what he had done twice on the way to Karbala, and many people left him then. He turns around and says to people, I will extinguish all the candles, whoever wants to go should go. When people who wanted to leave left, and there was left within the core of his companions who were to die the next day, Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, tomorrow will now be the day of Shahada. And turns round to Abbas, and speeches were made which we shall discuss perhaps on the 9th eve or the 10th eve. Speeches were made, and the Imam alayhi salam indicated who will die, where, when. Qasim was not mentioned. And Qasim turns round and says, oh my uncle, you haven't mentioned me. Will I not die tomorrow? Will I not be able to sacrifice my life for you? This is a 13-year-old boy asking Imam Hussein alayhi salam. You can imagine, I dare say, the masaib on Imam Hussein alayhi salam did not start with Qasim on the day of Ashura. It started on that occasion, and Bibi Zainab alayhi salam reports that what was Imam Hussein alayhi salam to tell Qasim? He did not have the heart. Those words did not reach his lips to say, yes, Qasim, you also will die tomorrow. So he turns to Qasim and says, Qasim, how do you see that? You are talking of dying tomorrow. How do you see that? And he says, Ya Ammi, death to me is ahlan min al asl. It is sweeter than even that. Sweeter than even honey. What matters to a 13-year-old boy is the sweet honey. He says, just as honey is sweet to me, dying in your court tomorrow is even sweeter than that honey. And this is how we acted the next day. That's how we acted the next day. Immediately companions started fighting. It is reported that even whilst companions were still fighting for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the turn of the Hashemites had not yet come. Qasim was there to Imam Hussein alayhi salam saying, uncle, give me leave so that I go, and I too fight in your way, and I get my shahada. Imam Hussein alayhi salam would say, Qasim, I do not have the heart to let you go. As I said yesterday, the greater pain to Imam Hussein alayhi salam was not so much that they died, but his separation from them, that he was in a state in which he had to let such young ones to go and die in his cause. Imam Hussein alayhi salam says no. So Hazrat Qasim alayhi salam reminds Imam Hussein and says, oh my uncle, my father has made a wasiyah that I should die in your cause. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Hazrat Qasim thought that was his best, his strongest argument to put forward. But Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, Qasim, it is in the remembrance of my brother that I can't let you go. When I see you, I remember my brother Hassan and the days of my brother Hassan, until a stage is arrived when our Muhammad had already given their lives. Now the mother of Qasim brings Qasim to Imam Hussein alayhi salam and says, "Ya Hussein, my husband Hassan has made a wasiyah to me, Ya Hussein. He has made a wasiyah that I should make sure that as he will not be here today, you should allow Qasim to go and sacrifice his life for him. Ya Hussein, if Hassan had been here, would you not have let him go?" Imam Hussein wept and Umm Farwa goes further and says, "Ya Hussein, if you would have let Hassan go to fight, Qasim is Hassan of today." What strong words this widow uses, and what case she presents. Imam Hussein says, "Ya Hussein, Qasim is the Hassan here, and he, that is the last one here Imam Hassan made as his livers were being torn." He says to me, "Umm Farwa, you will be in Karbala. Make sure that happens." Imam Hussein, on the day of judgment, won't Hassan have any share in the sacrifice? Imam Hussein says, "Qasim, you can go." He decorates Qasim himself. He adorns him with the amana of Imam Hassan, with the Allah of Imam Hassan, and says, "Qasim, I am truly letting you go and seeing my brother going to die in the cause of Islam." Qasim goes and fights as Hassan fought. Yes, indeed, Arzaqishami is sent by Umar ibn Sa'd to fight Qasim, that huge giant who fought 1,000 people at a go. He's being sent to fight this 13-year-old lad. And Arzaq says, "Ya Umar, it is insulting to me to send me to fight this boy." Umar says, "Arzaq, I am not asking you to go and fight him in vain. This is the son of Hassan, the grandson of Ali." Arzaq says, "I will send my youngest son to fight him. In no time, the youngest son is killed." He says, "He sent his second son. The second son is killed. He sends his eldest son. The eldest son is killed." And then he goes himself to fight Qasim. Time does not permit to show how Qasim killed him. Qasim kills Arzaq as well. Now Qasim is overtaken by thirst. Comes back to the Haram and says, "Father, give me little water that I can go and fight that." And Imam Hussein says, "Qasim, why are you asking for that which I cannot provide? After such a fight, after killing Arzaq, you come and Qasim asks for water and your uncle is helpless, not able to give water. Just put this ring in your mouth. You will get some solace." The ring is kept for a few seconds, then and Imam Hussein says, "Umm Farwa, he has killed the most valiant of soldiers, and he is back now to fight. He fights until he makes the Assalamu alaikum. His enemies come and say, he kills them, and as he kills them, they panic, and in panic, they all feed over the body of Qasim by Islam Hussein and Islam Hussein. It's already been cut into pieces by the Muslim soldiers. Imam Hussein and Islam Hussein. How do I take your mother? Imam Hussein and Islam Hussein. Ground. He picks up pieces of bone, lays them in the shape of the body, then lifts that aba, takes to the calf and says, "Umm Farwa, your Qasim is now already sick." ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون رحم الله من يقرأ الفاتحة.